music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. This is the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, it's Kelly, and welcome to the show. We've got a lot going on this week, welcoming Canadian-born but LA-based recording artist Ali X. We also discuss the return of most of the Spice Girls with our music editor Sharon Hyland, have a chat with dance pop artist Dion Todd about his latest release, and new music on the way from Def Leppard, Ariana Grande, and Jessie J. But first, on the line with us is singer-songwriter Ali X, who not only has had career success with songs like Catch, Paper Love, and Casanova, but who also played a huge part in co-writing songs on Troye Sivan's latest, very successful album, Bloom. Ali, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, thank you, Kelly Alexander, for having me on the Kelly Alexander Show.
I can't tell you, I am so stoked to have you on, because I've been trying to actually hunt you down for, like, several weeks. So I'm glad we finally...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I was... It's been a while that I wanted to have you on the show. And then about, like, I guess like a month ago, I was like, okay, time to make this happen. So then I started my search and all that sort of stuff. And so I'm happy we were finally able to track you down and get you on. Because, first of all, I'm extremely proud of you as a Canadian. I think you have amazing music.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm just so happy to know that you're doing well in Los Angeles. And all that sort of good stuff. But before we start with that, I did want to take you back to the beginnings, I guess. Did you always want to be like a singer-songwriter? Was that always in the cards for you?
I don't think I wanted to be a songwriter necessarily when I was a kid. I really just wanted to sing. But that said, I was writing songs from like the time I must have been like 4 years old or something when I got my first little like Casio keyboard and I wrote these really weird like emo song as a toddler. I got seriously into songwriting kind of later, like when I was in college.
Okay, cool. And did you, because I think I read somewhere that you have piano behind you, right? So is that how you write with piano?
I used to. I did like classical piano growing up, so I used to always write at the piano, but I actually find it kind of, it gets in the way of me kind of taking songs as far as they can go, because I tend to play like the same chords and get the same kind of ideas. So I really like to write to like loops, like bass loops or like guitar riffs or drum loops, usually.
Oh, that's really cool. And do you write lyrics first, Ali, and then, or do you need to listen to a beat? Do you need to listen to loop and then you kind of get inspired? Like, how does that work for you?
It's always different. Like if I looked at all my songs, most of them would have been melody first, but there's definitely songs that were concepts first or lyrics first as well. And then there's a lot of songs that were written with completely different lyrics, and then I completely reproduced them and rewrote them. I'm kind of like the queen of taking old ideas and completely turning them on their heads. And production is so important as well. So yeah, it's always a wild ride.
God, that's good. That's good. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Canada and sort of the part that maybe it plays being a Canadian and being a songwriter and just the vibe out of Toronto, because obviously Toronto is the place to be, I think, in a lot of regards with regards to current songwriters now. A lot of great talent is coming out of there. Talk to us about being, I guess, a part of that Toronto scene and then why you made that decision to actually move to L.A.
Well, it's funny that you said that, that there's such emerging talent from Toronto right now, because there is, and like there was even when I was living there. But the scene that I was a part of was way more experimental and kind of indie. I think at the time I didn't even realize I was making pop music, and I sort of struggled to find my place. And I never had a big following in Toronto. It wasn't until I moved to Los Angeles and sort of, you know, realized I was actually making pop music and inserted myself into that things really started to work for me. But that said, I really adore Toronto and all my friends there. I know some of the best musicians, some of the best musicians I know in the world are in Toronto, and I'm very proud to have come from there and to have all those influences.
Do you keep up to date with like some of the pop singers that are sort of currently happening right now out of Toronto? Because I shouldn't say Toronto, Canada. Like, do you sort of, you know about the Rhea Mays of the world and the Scott Hellmans and like the Tyler Shaws? Like, do you keep up with the other people that would be sort of playing up against you on Canadian radio?
To be perfectly honest, no, I don't. I actually don't. I don't listen to a ton of pop music these days. I've been really. And I also don't, just because I'm trying to, like, grow as a person and not feel sort of you know, down about my success or my lack of success or whatever, and not feed my ego. I don't really look at charts. I don't look at where I'm charting. I just try to, you know, keep music as like a therapeutic thing for me, and in terms of how I make it and in terms of how I listen to it. So what I listen to is not usually current music. I like to listen to a lot of old music and classical music these days anyway.
Can you talk to us a little bit about your influences? And do you find that they have dipped into the sound that LAX produces?
I mean, my main influences are like, you know, an emotional need to express myself. Like, that's really where at the heart of my songwriting, that's like what, where it comes from. But I don't know. I really love strong women that do pop music, but are total like weirdos at the same time, because I really relate to that. And it shows me that I have a path. And I would put like Cyndi Lauper and like Kate Bush in that category. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like someone like Bjork is amazing. She doesn't do pop music, obviously, but I also love artists that create kind of an entire world just beyond the music. Like they kind of create these environments for their followers and their fans, because I also relate to that a lot.
That's really cool. And what was it like getting tweeted by Katy Perry a couple of years ago saying that she really loved your song Catch?
Oh, that was really surreal at the time. And obviously, like, a great way to start off my career. it put me in front of a lot of eyeballs. But yeah, these days I don't think about it too much, sort of because it happened a while ago. And it's funny, just living in LA, like, I kind of, you know, you like see her around, and we have like mutual friends, and what seemed like something out of a dream, like out of a really wild dream, now seems just kind of more like, you know, just like life in Los Angeles. But that was really nice of her, and I'm still very flattered.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Canadian singer-songwriter LAX, who now is based out of Los Angeles. Make sure to follow her not only on her website, which is LAX.com, but of course you can check her out on Instagram as well, at LAX. Talk to us about the new album, Super Sunset. So if you can explain the name and then what you want people to take away from it.
Okay, well, Super Sunset, the easiest way to sum it up is like, it's like if I directed a Hollywood movie of my Hollywood story. So the record sort of chronicles the last 4 and now 5 years that I've been living in Los Angeles, and just all the ups and downs of trying to, quote unquote, make it in this industry, and also, you know, falling in love. And instead of telling the story in the exact way that it happened, I sort of, you know, gave myself a few different alter egos that represent like the different, you know, sort of people that I feel that I've been. And I kind of just exaggerated everything and stylized it and put it into a very bright, colorful, exaggerated environment.
That's very cool.
With the visuals.
And was it challenging to compile all the songs, or like, were you kind of in a zone, like in a role or on a roll, I should say, and things just kind of flowed out of you?
You know, I have to say with this record, it flowed out really fast. This is something that has not happened to me before, both with Collection 1 and Collection 2. Like, they took years to make. But I think because I was so directly writing about my experience, it was just really easy. And I think I had a lot that I needed to get off my chest. So this record was written in 4 months. And then, you know, it takes about another 4 months at least to finish the production on things. So all in all, I think I started in October and I finished in like May.
Okay, cool. And I always like to ask this of an artist, because I know that just with regards to myself, I know how I view things should turn out or whatever. And then either I'm A, happy, or B, not with the end result. How do you feel about the finished project? Because I know, just again, with the stuff that I do, I'm like, oh, I could have maybe done that better. But are you at peace and happy with what you've produced?
Yeah, I am. I hadn't listened to it since I finished it, and then it came out, and I took a bath that night, and I put my Beats headphones on, and I blasted it, and I was like, wow, this is really good. This is a nice feeling, you know, when you put so much time and energy into something. I do feel really, really proud of it, and I think it flows really well. Like it tells a story in the way that I hoped it would.
That's perfect. And actually, that's a great lead into another question I would have, because as you and I both know, especially in pop world, it's a singles market. Like everybody seems to just, you know, release singles and you know, we get some albums, but we don't get a lot of them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on, obviously it was important for you to do an album. Do you continue to view that way? Do you think you'll always want to put out albums and tell complete stories, even down to the way, like you said, like how you sequenced the album?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I haven't said this in an interview yet, but when I started the writing process for this, it was actually just, I was single-minded about it. Like my team said, you know, we need new music, whatever, go to the studio. And so I started writing songs. And I have to tell you, it was really hard for me to think in that way. Like, I'm writing a single, I want this single to do well, I want the single to be a hit, whatever. It's so much easier for me to write when it comes from a conceptual body of work kind of mindset. So even though we kind of marketed and released this as singles, like most of the songs were released one a month for like the last 6 months, it was really important for me that it came together as a complete body of work.
Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about your artist career versus your songwriting career. And I know that you've done like some cool work with Troye Sivan, which I'll get to in just a sec, but just that specific question itself, is it hard for you to balance your time between Ali X, the performer, versus Ali X, the I'm going to write for Troye Sivan?
It's not hard. What is hard is trying to be a successful songwriter that, you know, that writes for pitch and gets songs on the radio, and to be an artist that has like a flourishing career. I'm yet to really do that. Like this year I kind of put the songwriting for pitch on in the back seat, and other than Troye's album, which I was very involved in and very, you know, happy to be involved in, I just focused on my artist stuff this year. I kind of just try to follow my intuition with it, and whatever excites me, that's what I do. And right now I just feel very inspired to pursue my own artist career, but I imagine that it'll fluctuate as my life goes on. Who knows, maybe one day I'll end up just songwriting or just being an artist. I'm not sure.
When it comes to being Ali X, a performer, I want to find out too, if you're going out on tour, are we getting you out on tour? Are you going to come to Canada?
Well, I'm definitely coming home for the holidays, but okay. I don't think I'll be performing other than with some friends, probably at some small little venues, but I definitely will be doing some touring in 2019, but nothing official we can announce.
Okay, cool. And I did want to speak to you as well about your LGBTQ fans, because like,
yes.
When they...
Or should I say Yaz?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, they are so, like, it's just awesome. If you get that family on your team, like, you are good to go. You know what I mean? And so what does the LGBTQ community mean for you?
I mean, it's kind of like, I don't really have a exact answer of why, but I just have always been friends and really family with gay men, gay boys, like ever since I was a kid. Like those have always been my best friends and the people that really seem to understand me as a person and what I do and have the same sense of humor and, you know, lift me up when other people call me a weirdo or, you know, when, like, I was never a girl that, like, guys wanted to date, but I was always a girl that, like, you know, my gay friends wanted to celebrate, and it's really sort of carved who I am. And so I think that just naturally, because that's in me, the music that I make resonates with that community, and I couldn't be happier. It's just... It's who I want to be my fan base. I mean, anyone's welcome to be my fan, join the club. But yeah, like it makes total sense to me, and it's a very comfortable place for me.
That's cool. I actually interviewed dance artist Cece Peniston. You know, I've had her on the show a couple of times, and she actually said to me once. She said her gay fans are like her best girlfriends. That's how she views them. I thought that was a good way.
Yeah, totally.
I did want to ask you to go back to Troy for just a second. Obviously, you know, I was checking out the writing credits, and you are on a bunch of his songs, including, you know, the big one with 17 off the album. First of all, Bloom is doing, you know, amazingly well. I actually just saw Troy. He was in Montreal not long ago. Yeah, he was so good. And I just want to ask you, you know, being a songwriter on that album, first of all, tell us how that came about. And also, I'm assuming your phone is ringing a lot, maybe to co-write, even though I know you're focusing on being an artist right now. But I'm sure that just totally padded the resume, right?
Yeah, writing with Troy has been a really great thing for me. It's definitely, you know, made my publishers happy, and because his work is so highly regarded. Even if Troy isn't, you know, I wouldn't say he's a huge radio artist, but he's a huge culture artist, and he is a really impacted, like, the millennial generation. And I just can't say enough good things about him. He's one of the best. Like, he's probably one of the most famous people that I'm friends with, and he's also one of the most lovely, compassionate, caring people that I'm friends with. And you can't always say that about, you know, celebrities.
True.
I'm very proud of the record and of him, and so happy to have taken part in it.
That's fantastic. Well, congratulations, because the album is just amazing, and all the songs that I saw that you were on are fantastic. So good job.
Thank you.
Before I let you go, I did want to ask you, you know, if there is someone that you would love to either A, collaborate with vocally, or write with them, or for your own music, or on an album for them. Like, is there someone out there that is, like, on your bucket list?
Yeah, lots of people. I really feel like collaborating with girls these days. I'm hoping to get in the studio with, like, Tove Lo, Dua Lipa, Charlie XCX, you know, just kind of like some pop girls that I really like and respect. Those would all be on my list.
Perfect. And do you have any advice for, because again, I couldn't be prouder of you just, you know, coming out of Canada and going down there and doing what you need to do in Los Angeles.
Thank you.
And it just makes me super proud, especially, you know, playing your songs on the radio. It's great. And what would you say to, you know, like a young Canadian maybe who wants to kind of do what you've been doing? Like, what's your biggest piece of advice for them?
Oh, man. If they want to do pop, I don't know, this is going to be a controversial thing to say, but I did feel that I needed to kind of get to LA to make it happen. But that said, Canada is such a young country, and everything is kind of changing there. And it's so important that we foster Canadian talent and that we support it, not only when it becomes successful internationally. And it's something that, you know, I had always heard discussed as I was coming up as a musician and trying to break through. And I felt kind of sad that it was true that when I went to LA, like, that's kind of when things started to happen. So I don't want to advise young people to leave Canada. What I would like to advise people in general in Canada to do is really support your Canadians while they're in Canada. Don't wait for them to have international success before, you know, really standing behind them as, like, stars. So, sorry, I think I strayed away from your question a little bit, but I feel the need to say that.
That's perfect. And do you think you'll ever move back to Canada, or do you think we've lost you?
Oh, God, I want to come back. I miss it. I love coming back to Canada these days. Like, it's literally a breath of fresh air. It's not so polluted. But it's unpolluted in so many ways. And, you know, I really appreciate, like, our healthcare system now and our politics and just our modesty and our compassion. It's a really wonderful country, and I'm so proud to be Canadian, and I do hope to come back.
Awesome.
And base myself at least half the time there one day.
Okay, great. And you have an open invitation from me to come to Montreal to hang out. Cool. We can go have poutine or something.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I send you the biggest hug. Thank you so much for doing this, and I'm so proud of you, and keep up the great work with the new album.
Thank you so much for having me. Great interview.
That's Canadian singer-songwriter Ali X. Make sure to follow her on her website, alix.com, and of course on Instagram, @AliX. And now we're happy to bring in the big gun, as it were, our music editor, Sharon Hyland. Did you love that one?
Is that a big gun? Are you just glad to see me?
So this week we are chatting about the return of the Spice Girls. Well, most of them. It was recently announced that all the girls minus Victoria Beckham, aka Posh Spice, is going to be reuniting for a series of concerts in the UK this coming summer. Now, there's lots to discuss regarding our favorite girl power group. And Sharon, we'll start with probably the most important question. Can they do this reunion and be successful without Victoria?
Without a doubt.
Point.
Do you want a minute to think about that?
So without a doubt.
I totally think that they can do that, for sure.
Okay, cool.
And no offense, really, because have they not done it before as a foursome?
Yes, without Jerry.
Yeah. So I think it's all personalities at that point. They all bring something different to the table, literally, but especially vocally. And I think that the video that they posted the other day, where they were cracking into the four-part harmony, proved just that. So I think it'll be something that that we girl power fans can look forward to.
Did you hear the statement that Victoria put out, which I thought was really good and classy? She said, being in the Spice Girls was a hugely important part of my life, and I wish my girls so much love and fun as they go back out on tour. I know they're going to put on an amazing show, and the fantastic fans, past and present, are going to have a wonderful time.
Class act, for sure. And I joke all the time about how she brought one dance move to the table. And it's a joke. Clearly, the Spice Girls are what they are and who they are because they were five. But if she can't make it, she can't make it. And way to send them off in a positive on a positive note.
Did you hear that Mel B kind of took a swipe at Victoria on Halloween?
I did. And what I don't understand, and maybe I'm just not digging too much into the rumor mill or digging too hard, is I didn't realize that there was any sort of a rift between them to begin with.
Yeah, well, that's why I was shocked, because she said that, you know, well, for people who don't know, on Halloween, Mel B dressed up as Victoria and with a sign saying, mm-hmm. I'm not going on tour. And then she had somebody with her, a friend of hers, dressed up as Beckham, like her husband, in a soccer jersey, basically saying, please, like something like, do it for the fans. Anyways, then further to that, I guess Mel was asked about it. And she said, yeah, I think Victoria probably got a laugh at it. But then she goes, we kind of have this love-hate relationship, which, as you just mentioned, Sharon, I'm like shocked about, because I never thought that, like never in a million years, especially they were all at each other's places earlier in the year. So I don't know, Mel, I guess sometimes goes a little off the rails. And I was surprised that she would say that out loud, because none of us would ever know this if she hadn't said it, you know?
Well, and then it's funny, too, because I think she's known for just blurting that stuff, too. And when you really try to dissect the meaning of a love-hate relationship, it sounds fairly extreme. But, you know, we might be thinking too much about it, but maybe we're not.
Yeah.
Maybe they love to hate each other. Or they hate to love each other.
Could be that, too. And it's funny how you say blurt things out, because as of this announcement, it was only supposed to be confirmed, you know, the six shows in the UK this coming summer. But then in another interview, Mel said, oh, no, we're going on a world tour, or something to that effect. So even though no dates have been confirmed, it sounds like they're using this or these six dates as a barometer to see fan interest, I guess.
Yeah, I would say for sure that's the case. And even to consider that, it's I think that it takes a lot to put a tour together. And I would bet that they know that there's going to be more past the six.
Oh, I can't see how they wouldn't, especially because earlier today, last night, sorry, I read that they are standing to make about over 3 million each for the six shows. So I can't see them not doing it.
And Emma Bunton, as a radio host, is likely not making that. We know that, Kel.
Ah, she's such a stellar radio host. I wanted to ask you, too, you know, Girl Power was their main platform back in the 90s, along with, you know, their crafty pop music. Do you think with the current social and political climate that Girl Power, that motto is going to resonate even more these days with their fans and their new fans?
I think what they bring to the table certainly is a reminder, not that they invented girl power, but that they certainly created a huge splash when they happened upon the scene at the time, and the unabashed reminder that that it's important more than ever. And I think with each cycle, with each generation, it becomes an important reminder. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it needs to be put out there again, little post-it note.
And should they stick to performing their hits, or do you think along with these shows they should record new music?
I'm pretty sure that if they're pretty sure, like as if I know anything for sure, my guess would be that if there is new music, I don't even know if there would be new music. You know what I mean? I think that they can really ride on the hits. People love the hits. Mm-hmm. I watched a couple of interviews, sort of street interviews with some random people that were like, yeah, my mom grew up with them. It's kind of new music to me. So they don't even necessarily need to make new music if it can be new to somebody else.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And is it risky to consider making new music if it's just four of them going on tour? The fifth one's not committing to a tour. Is she open to scheduling studio time? I mean, that's a whole other, I think it's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, exactly. And there's rumors that she might do a couple of dates. But the fact that she's not doing any UK dates already says to me that she's probably not going to do anything else.
Because if she can't go down the street, she's not going across the pond, as you like to
say. Exactly. And lastly, I didn't know if you saw this, but I wanted to bring it up. Did you see the Instagram post that Adele put up about the Spice Girls?
Oh, I didn't. What is it? What's happening?
Yeah, so she doesn't post all the time. So when she posts, it's pretty cool. And so Adele posted this picture of herself as a kid. I want to say she was like 9 or 10 or something like that, surrounded by Spice Girls photos in what appears to be her bedroom. And I think she's like sucking on a lollipop or something. And so she said something to the effect of like, I'm so ready for this or something like that. So,
oh, cool.
Love Adele.
Talk about a shout out.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's fantastic. So Sharone, thank you for this. Appreciate it.
Kelly, it's my pleasure. I hope you have a great day.
Fantastic. We'll do our best. That is our music.
And spice up your life.
That's how we roll. That is our music editor, Sharon Hyland. You can listen to Sharon and I, by the way, host our very own podcast, 90s Now, where we give you all the fixins of 90s and now. You can find us on 90snow.com or, of course, on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, and now Spotify.
The Kelly Alexander Show, bringing you fresh sounds like this. Reach out and touch fate.
You're asking yourself right now, is that really Depeche Mode? Actually, it's Def Leppard and their take on Depeche Mode's hit song, Personal Jesus. This is their first official single from their upcoming brand new hits package called The Story So Far, The Best of Def Leppard. And I'll tell you, not a lot of people should attempt to remake a Depeche Mode song, but I think they've actually pulled it off. And we shall see, by the way, if Def Leppard make it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2019. They are currently on the short list of nominees, and we'll have the answer to all of this in December.
One taught me love, one taught me patience, and one taught me pain. Now I'm so amazing to have loved and I've lost.
Ariana Grande had a big surprise for all her fans last Saturday. She announced she was dropping a new single just before midnight, and social media blew up with the news, especially when rumors began circulating that the song would be about her past loves, including her most recent ex, Pete Davidson. And sure enough, the song did name check a bunch of her exes, but all in a good way. And I have to tell you, I have totally fallen in love with this song. It's got a super catchy melody, and she's getting a lot of positive reviews. Ariana, by the way, heading out on tour to support her latest album, Sweetener, and there's also rumors that she might be working on more new music.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Place to go. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
English artist Jessie J, who is usually known for her slammin' pop tunes like Price Tag, Bang Bang, Domino, and Do It Like a Dude, has recently released her first ever holiday album called This Christmas Day. The album was actually recorded in just 2 weeks with Jessie flying back and forth between Los Angeles and Europe during her summer tour trying to get everything done. And she worked with some legendary producers on this Christmas album, including Babyface, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, and David Foster. Jessie also has some duets on the album with Grammy Award-winning group Boyz II Men and Babyface.
New music on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks so much for spending time with us on the show. And don't forget, you can follow us on all of our social media by hitting up our website, kellyalexandershow.com. Now, recently I had a chance to sit down in person and catch up with a friend of mine, artist Dion Todd, who is making his triumphant return to the music industry with a brand new song and album on the way.
The Kelly Alexander Show.
We are very excited to welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show somebody I used to know when I was in university, and so this is a huge treat to have him on the show now that he's back in the world of music. So a dance pop artist, Dion Todd, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. Okay.
This is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. How is it that you look identical?
Let's keep that up.
Yeah,
but I still look the same as when I was in university.
Yeah.
So we met when I was like 19 or whatever. And then we're probably around the same age.
I can't believe how fast
time has flown. We were both like working with the same music producer.
Yep.
During my attempt to be an artist.
Getting our start.
That's right. And so you had this amazing song that took off at the time called Maybe, that like charted across the country and lots of support in Canada. And then, which we're going to talk about actually. So I'm going to start though. I'm going to bring you back to your childhood. Did you know as a kid that you wanted to be in music, or how did that all start? Because we never had that conversation when you and I were buds.
Yeah, no, we didn't. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've always kind of been, I guess, musical throughout my life. But when I was 9 years old, I was in a boys choir, actually in Ontario. They're like a world-renowned boys choir called the Cambridge Kiwanis Boys Choir. And so my first commercial recording, I was 12. I had like a solo on this Christmas album for the choir, and we toured Europe a little bit. And, you know, I was kind of like the center of attention, like this little boy soprano. And then my voice changed.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically kicked me out of the choir because, of course, I was
not sounding like you're 11 or 12
anymore. So I was devastated. So then I actually stopped singing for a while because I was like, well, you know, when you're 12 years old, that's pretty hard to deal with when you're kind of at the top of your game and doing recordings and all of a sudden you're nothing. So then I started playing instruments for a while.
Okay.
And then I didn't get back into it till I was about 18. I met something called karaoke.
Oh, karaoke. Love the karaoke.
And the addiction began.
There you go. So talk to us about, because we're going to speak about the new music that's out. I know Remedy for Insanity is the new single, so we're going to get to that in a sec. But how did your hit song Maybe come about? Like, did you have an idea for that? Like, was it hard to write? I think you said you co-wrote it with your mom.
Actually, that was the second.
The second song?
Yeah. So when I started going to karaoke, I was in a competition that I won. And actually, the famous Canadian country singer, maybe most people haven't heard of her, but Carole Baker, came up after the competition. She's like, wow, you have a really good voice and, you know, you should like pursue something. I'm like, well, you know, how do I do that? She's like, well, you should write music. You know, so that just kind of planted the seed. So I just started like playing around with writing some different music. And, you know, maybe the lyrics and kind of the melody for Maybe was, you know, just keeping it simple, but one of the earlier songs that I was experimenting with. So, and then, you know, started the path of trying to find a producer and studios, and that's of course how I met you back then. And, you know, the song just kind of evolved from there.
It
took maybe two or three different producers to work with, and then just kind of, you know, kept bringing it up a level and got better and better.
Now, when the song took off, because it did, and like we said, many people were very excited about that track, and it did well, it charted well. Did you know that that song was going to go? Like, did you have a gut feeling that it was going to go?
No, I actually was kind of like laughing at the time. Because, you know, I'm like playing these songs for, you know, this other guy in the music industry, you know, and I'm embarrassed of them, right? Because I'm like, oh, this is like cheesy stuff. You know, he's going to laugh and like, you know, it's playing this music. And then he's like, wow, this song's really good. You should do something with it. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, to me, that was like the most, you know, Maybe Baby, I Love You, Maybe Baby. I mean, you listen to the lyrics, they are kind of, I mean, they're catchy, but
yeah, they're
totally
catchy.
To me, they're corny.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
we all have
but,
those.
But, you know, that sells, right? It's easy to remember.
Exactly.
And it's catchy. So I was shocked. I was completely shocked. Even to the, like, for a while, like, it would come on the radio and I would, like, turn it off because I couldn't listen to it because I'm like, I don't even like my own music. I'm like, how do other people like this so much? I guess I'm not a good judge of character for what does well or what doesn't do well.
And how did the ride go? Because obviously it was crazy for several months or over a year. I can't remember at the time. But did, were you able to enjoy it, or was it like a whirlwind?
It was pretty, yeah. I mean, it happened so fast. For a period, it was like almost surreal because, I mean, it, you know, literally, you know, overnight was on one of the biggest, you know, dance compilations in the country, like one of MC Mario's biggest compilations. And then radio stations, like, pretty much picked it up immediately. So it wasn't even like, you know, I want, you know, like a lot of times maybe things are kind of slower, you know, yeah. and you kind of have the time for it to take off. So it was really unexpected for me, because even back then when I was doing music, I wasn't doing it thinking, oh, I want to have a career in music, so I'm going to release a song and be a pop star. Yeah. For me, it was more like doing it on the side, being fun. So I wasn't ready for it to be like that big that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, it was fun. I mean, I said, even now when I look back at shows and stuff, when I see myself perform, like I was so unprepared. Like I look like this awkward, you know, sheep standing on stage, like trying to, you know, like dance, or, you know, I can't even watch myself because I look so awkward because I wasn't prepared. Like I hadn't practiced performing, mm-hmm. and, you know, I didn't have anyone helping me with stage presence or anything. So I was just kind of like thrown into it, like, and you know, I dealt with it, but I mean, when I look back, yeah, it's hard for me to look back at it.
Yeah, that's how I feel too sometimes. I'm like, why did I choose to wear that?
Yeah, with the, you know, the Backstreet Boys hair, you know?
Yeah. I don't
know.
It was such a time.
Wearing clothes. It was hilarious.
So Maybe came out, and then Magic, that's the one you co-wrote with your mom.
Yeah, my mother co-wrote.
So how did, like, did you feel like you had pressure to remain, you know, like, because Maybe had done so well, like, did you have that sophomore pressure?
Yeah, you know, it's really hard when you're releasing singles, because, you know, you're only as good as your last single.
Mm-hmm.
So And I mean, there's so much, you can have one hit, and then if the next song is not as good, like, you're done. Like, they just basically move on to the next thing. So yeah, there was a lot of pressure. And you know, when Magic came out, the producers made it similar to Cher's song Believe, because it was
that
really
sound,
popular,
yeah.
and
yeah.
the sound. And Magic actually crossed into the US a bit too, so it ended up on some dance charts down there. So Magic, I'd say, did equally to Maybe, but different, because it's weird, because a lot of the stations that played Maybe didn't necessarily embrace Magic, but then the stations that didn't embrace Maybe played Magic. So okay. At one point I had, you know, Maybe on radios in some cities, and then Magic on others. So I, depending on what city I went to, people knew me for a different song, which was kind of weird.
Okay.
It was like these pockets of, you know, the popularity for the songs.
So when you decided to come back, mm-hmm. after you put that album out, did you take another break for a while before you...
Like, I did. So, you know, I, you know, basically, I guess you could say building a business empire. I worked my way up through business. Actually, I was in the corporate world for a while. I was actually a regional director of operations for a division of Air Transat for a number of years. So I oversaw all of Western Canada for like travel agencies and sales distribution for Transat. And then I decided to start my own companies, left Transat and, you know, built some companies that have done quite well. I went to school. Mm-hmm. I went to MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and got an MBA. I think part of the whole reason for that too is I was still kind of traumatized from being 12 years old and losing my voice. And whoa, what happens
the
now, right?
Plan,
so I think that always stuck in my head that, well, I need a backup. So if music never works out or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I have another focus or I have other things.
Well, MBA is a pretty good backup. That's a pretty good backup.
So actually last year I was at MBA or at MIT rather, doing my MBA, and we had kind of our final projects, and one of my final projects was working for a local charity there. It's called the Freedom Clinic, which is a clinic that provides services to human traffic victims.
Okay.
And they were looking at creative ways of bringing awareness to the charity and, you know, raising money, because, of course, grants and things like that have mm-hmm. been cut down. So I had the idea, well, why don't we do a song? I'll do a song. And that was kind of my, not that I was expecting to get back into music, but I thought, okay, you know what, I can write a song. I can get some donations from, you know, classmates and from the school and get the community yeah. involved. So we chose a song that me and my mother had written. And, you know, drawing on experiences that I actually spent in a shelter as a child for, you know, families of abuse.
Yeah.
And worked also with someone that I became friends with. Her name is Tiffany Fred. She's a writer and singer in the U.S. She's a Grammy Award winner. She worked on Jennifer Hudson's album.
Okay.
So we wrote the song, and just through some contacts, you know, worked with a Grammy Award winning producer. And released the song. Never really expected, because it was, again, it was all the proceeds from the song went to the charity. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't releasing it to, you know, thinking, oh, I'm going to get back into the music industry. Yeah. I'm going to do this to help the nonprofit.
Yeah.
And we released the song, and actually blew my expectations to how well it did. And I mean, you know, with very little effort or, you know, or promotion or anything behind it. You know, it landed on some charts. Actually, won a radio station in New Brunswick, you know, charted at number one. It
wow.
hit number 22 on the ADISQ, you know, radio chart. So it defied my expectations and how well it did.
Yeah.
And then that's what got me kind of, I'm
the
like,
wheels turning.
You know, this is, I missed this.
Yeah.
You know, I realized how much I missed it. Because
yeah.
at that point, you know, I'd been out of it for 12 years. So then I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this again. I mean, I'm at a position in my life now where I have, you know, I have the ability to do it without having, you know, to
financial
worry
stress
about,
or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Because I mean, you know, anyone that's in the music industry these days, whether you're an independent artist, unless you're a huge artist like a Taylor Swift, I mean, it's difficult. You know, because of YouTube and, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, gone are the days of, you know, the big royalties you'd get
yep.
for songs playing on. I mean, now it's like it streams on Spotify and you get 0.00000009 cents per stream.
That's
so,
right. Yeah.
So, you know, you have to do it because you have a love of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I thought, you know what, the heck with it. I'm going to write a new album and release some new music. And, you know, now I'm in a position where I can work with, you know, some really high caliber people that kind of I'd always sort of dreamt about working with, but
yeah.
I never had the opportunity. And that led me to, you know, releasing this new song that just came out a few days ago.
So let's talk about that. So Remedy
yeah.
for Insanity.
Yeah.
When? So where? Like, did you write it earlier this year, or you've already had it?
So I wrote it. Actually, I wrote that song about 10 years ago.
Okay.
But I wasn't happy with it, so I actually decided to enlist the help of Tiffany Fred again. Incredible writer. So I gave it to her, and I said, you know, here, Tiffany, take it, and you know, you work with it and see if you can
flesh it out or whatever.
Yeah. Get it better. And it's only been recently that I've found that working with co-writers, it's almost like when you have an outside perspective, they can do things that are better matched to your voice than you can. Because I think of a lot of the songs now that I've co-written, and I love them more than like when I did them myself.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why. But so co-wrote it with Tiffany. We used the same producer that I used for Rocket Ship State of Mind. He's a Grammy Award winner for a song he remixed for Kylie Minogue.
Okay.
And yeah, and different sound. So I think it took me a while to get around that music has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's and evolves.
Yeah.
And you know, that's hard when you're in the music industry, because sometimes you're so tied to your craft or to your art. You know, you forget, okay, what does the public want? Okay, I know what I want and what I like, but if you actually want to have a business of it and make money at it,
mm-hmm.
you have to think in business terms as far as, okay, well, no, you need to give a product that, you know, people will actually want to buy, not that's just going to go out and kind of get lost through the shuffle. So it's interesting now kind of coming back into music and having all the business expertise and the business education that I have, because that's probably about 80 to 90% of my time now is more on the business side
for
than
sure,
it is
right?
actually on the music
yeah,
side.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the song. It's, you know, the feedback's been tremendous.
How would you categorize yourself now, like artistically, like dance pop? Like how would you dance pop?
Yeah. yeah.
Okay.
I think, you know, when I first started in music, I was basically writing sappy love ballads. But there wasn't really a huge market for sappy love ballads. You know, there was a Celine Dion, there was a Michael Bublé, but there was a market for dance music.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of my songs were sappy love ballads that we just basically put to a dance beat. And at first I didn't really like that, but the more time went by, I loved it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now I'm like, you know, when I write a song now, I write it as a dance song. I have some stuff on my album that won't be, you know, as dancey as most of it, but just about every song I have will have a remix.
And when can we expect the album? Like, do you have a release date?
Early 2019.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Are you done recording? Or are you still finishing things up?
I think there'll be 13 tracks on the album, and I've finished 11.
Okay.
The other two are almost done. So pretty much everything we have done. Remedy for Insanity was kind of the, you know, the lead off song to that. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's doing really well. It was released on Tuesday, and I think on Tuesday it hit number 18 on the iTunes top 200, and it's been in the top 200 since. So hopefully it'll stay strong, and we're getting a lot of positive feedback. So
when you were writing the album, like, did you write it in a way, or I know you're still finishing it off, but did you have plans, like you knew that maybe Remedy was going to be the first single? Like, do you have a plan for like your next three or four singles to release off of it?
I think we have a pretty good idea. I think you know, and again, for me, it's interesting because I'm out of that artist mode now, and I'm more in business mode,
right?
Which you know, makes a huge difference. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm already seeing a huge difference now compared to when I released the song last year that I did for the charity. I wasn't in business mode. You know, I was going to the producer, and instead of, you know, letting a Grammy award-winning producer take the song and do whatever he thought was going to be best, I was telling him what to do.
Right.
You know, and which made the song sound dated, because I'm still, you know, doing a song like I, you know, like I would have done, you know, 10 or,
yeah.
or you know, 20, God, dare I say 20 years ago. But so, you know, this time around, I was like, wait a minute, I got to get out of that mind frame, because that, you know, that song could have did a lot better had I not confined the producer to a style that really was outdated.
Yeah.
So whereas with Remedy for Insanity, I gave it to him and said, here, just do whatever you want. So a lot of the songs that are on the album are songs I've written previously.
Okay.
But most of them, I took them and gave them to co-writers. So aside from Tiffany Fred, there's a couple of other girls that I work with. One is Maya Marie. She was actually one of the backup singers for Britney Spears and has done co-writing for Britney Spears.
Amazing.
And Krista Youngs. She's, you know, these girls have worked with Christina Aguilera. I mean, pretty much every major artist. Another song that I have coming out shortly was written by Lyrica Anderson, and she's pretty much, if you look at Chris Brown's albums, she's a lot of the songs on Chris Brown's album she's written. Beyonce,
okay.
Jason Derulo. So the writers, the co-writers that I've been working with are the highest of caliber. I knew I had to enlist that, mm-hmm. you know, to basically take my songs to a different level, because I recognize that I was kind of locked in a little bit of a time warp, you know, that nostalgic, oh, mm-hmm. I want the sound to be, you know, like it used to be, but
yeah.
then I have to put my business hat on and think, well, wait a minute, that's not going to sell, right? If
right.
I really want to do this as a business,
yeah.
you know, I have to
think that
get
way.
With the times. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, totally get that. And I did want to ask you too, because it does seem like these days, or the last 5-6 years anyways, that it's a singles market.
Yeah.
So what led you to actually do an album? Because a lot of artists won't do an album. I'm glad you did, because I think albums are still really important to tell a story and all that kind of stuff. But like, knowing that it's usually a singles market, what led you to actually do the 13 tracks?
Well, I think because, again, for me, it's sort of like a combination of both. And you had a good point. It's like telling a story. So the songs that I have that are going on the album, like they all sort of tell, because just about every song I write from personal experience.
Right.
And for people to really know me, they kind of have to listen to every song. And if they listen to every song, it's like each song is a chapter. Right. And I think that's a good way of people sort of to kind of get to know me. And I think the other thing, too, is that, you know, I have so many other songs written that won't be on this album that, like, I don't expect obviously every song that's on the album to be a single, but there's so much other music that I need to get out. If I just do singles, I'm going to be, you know, 150 years old before I get everything out. So I'm going to have to, you know, start lumping together some of the songs. 'Cause that's probably the important part for me mm-hmm. now, is like sharing, you know,
your story.
Yeah. And, you know, being able to emotionally move people. I mean, even now, you know, I hear people, you know, that'll say, oh, wow, you know, Maybe Was Our Wedding Song. Okay. And this dude, he's like, yeah, Maybe Was Our Wedding Song. Okay. The lyrics, Maybe Baby I Love You, Maybe Baby I Don't. That was your wedding song. Like, but, you know, you realize how much I've emotionally moved people, or people that, mm-hmm. you know, have attached themselves to a particular song because they can relate to my music. Even though I'm dance music, I'm not like what a lot of people would categorize as dance music, which is maybe, you know, very repetitive lyrics and they don't really tell a story and mm-hmm. it's more the sound. My songs are actually like fully structured, you know, like little mini movies, I guess, basically. So so it's a little different than, you know, a lot of stuff that's out there. So yeah.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, by the way, pop dancer, dance pop artist, I should say, Dion Todd. You could check out his website, DionTodd.com, to grab all of his social media handles. I did want to ask you, because you said you upped your game with regards to co-writers now. Is there a co-writer out there that you would love to work with, that you'd like to put out into the universe right now?
You.
Yay!
Didn't we always talk about doing
That's
something?
That's true. That'd be awesome.
Yes, we totally should.
That'd be awesome.
I like working with, for me, it's not so much about the name. It's about, you know, someone's talent mm-hmm. and, you know, how you jive together. Because,
right.
I mean, I've worked with people that, you know, you work with them because of who they are and you get nowhere. Right. And I think co-writing is like one of those things. It's like dating. You
it's
know?
True.
You,
yeah.
You know, you have to
have
not
a, have
everyone
a chemistry.
You're going to have a good date with.
That's yeah. right. It's true. Did you I want to ask you, because I to get your opinion on this, because you know, you and I both did dance music, and you're still doing dance music. I remember asking this of Crystal Waters once. I feel like back in the day, dance got a lot of a bad rap, like you said, with some of the music that was out there where the lyrics sucked.
Yeah.
And it was really for the beat and the chord progression, so people at the club could dance. But then, like, for example, I will use Crystal as an example, because if you listen to her Storyteller album from 1994, those songs, like, she writes songs, like, they're amazingly well-written songs. She's like, and Gypsy Woman, her big song is written about a homeless person, you know, and people don't know that, like, dancing, and but it's about this homeless person. So I always would hate when you'd get comments, oh, like, dance is crap.
Yeah.
And it's like only rock and roll got, you know, the street cred.
Yeah.
And so now I feel like it's in a better place, but do you still find that we're kind of like the dirty secret in a way? Like,
I think so. You know, I think one of the other, you know, stigmas that's been on the dance industry is a lot of the music is overproduced. So, you know, you have a lot of artists that if they tried to recreate how they sound on a recording on stage, they wouldn't even sound close because their voice has been
processed.
So processed. And that's what I try to do. Like, even when I'm recording, I tell the producers not to overproduce, because when I sing live, I want to sound the same. Like, I want to be like Celine Dion. When people come to your concert, they're like, wow, I could close my eyes and I feel like I'm listening to your recording. And you know, I think there's more of that coming in now, because, you know, you listen to a lot of music that's on the radio. There's certainly a lot more dance music than you used to hear, but it's more almost like mainstream pop made into dance songs. So the songs are telling more of a story, you know, they're not, you know, I mean, back when dance music, you know, in the early 90s, remember, you know, it's like the Euro beats, right? But then, you know, a repetitive female vocal with then like a rap in the middle, you know, and it was like the same thing over and over again, and everything was over processed, so no one could sing anything live. I think now it's become more, almost like a more of a mainstream dance, so it's definitely evolved, you know, becoming a lot more popular. I think there's still, you know, still some room to grow, and some, you know, but I mean, you know, music industry is always evolving. So
Who are you listening to these days?
Wow. So my music tastes are really eclectic, and I think it's just because of my creative side. And I you know, like, sometimes I'll listen to opera, sometimes I'll listen to pop, sometimes I'll listen to rap. I have one friend, don't judge me, but actually introduced me to like black metal and death metal, and I was like, you know, more for like the sounds and stuff, but it was actually really interesting. So, you know, I like to listen to different types of music because I kind of draw on inspiration sometimes, for like, even if it's one small thing that I might pick up and think, oh, that'd be kind of really cool, you know, to throw into a song. I do tend to as far as what my likeness is, it does tend to be geared more towards top 40 dance pop, because that's what I do, and it's, you know, it's what I like. I have a lot of respect for artists that write their own music or do their own production. So, you know, people like Lady Gaga, you know, I don't tend to focus too much on artists that are more like manufactured, you know, where they're just the voice on the CD. To me, you know, there's a lot of people out there. I mean, you go to YouTube, you see millions of singers that have amazing voices. Any one of them could be famous if they were at the right place at the right time. It takes a different caliber of a person to write their own music and produce their own music. To me, that's talent.
And before I let you go, what do you see, like, because, and now that you're Mr. like MBA guy, do you have like specific goals kind of mapped out, let's say, for the next year? Because I know, like, obviously your brain is working on a business way, but then there's the artistic part of you. So is there certain milestones you want to accomplish, like, in the next 6 months?
You know, one of the main reasons for me getting back into music is to create a platform so that I can promote some of the other, like, human trafficking, domestic abuse. One thing that's very vivid in my memory was when I was at the top of my game with Maybe and Magic, I was in Canada. I actually went to some shelters, like, for abused families, and would talk to kids, and the way their faces would light up, you know, and when I could say, you know what, I was in your place, you know, once, and they're like, wow, okay, so we can be a pop star, we can be anything. It was just like they come to life, right? No amount of money can have that kind of an influence on a child, you know. So I, you know, I have, you know, money from my businesses and things like, but there's only so much that I can do to influence with money. With a child, it's like, you know, when you're famous or when you're, you know, a celebrity, they will listen to you, they will believe you, they will follow you. It's like, you know, you look at some even some of the weird celebrities that are out there now and the followings and stuff, they like the Kardashians or whatever, right? Like yeah. people are engaged, right? And they're not engaged because, you know, they wouldn't be engaged if they were just wealthy people with no TV show. So for me, the music is more about creating a platform to, and definitely there's a greater plan. I think right now the first step is, you know, with this first single, which is going extremely well, you know, to start building my exposure and getting back up there. Rocket Ship State of Mind last year, the single I released, was more of a test, you know, with the, that's what kind of got my mind turning, but I hadn't really planned on at that point doing anything, you know.
More substantial.
Yeah. And it took me a year because I was, you know, my promoter was like, you know, let's get a new song. And I'm like, I don't know, but, you know, and then I'm like, dang, yeah, okay, I got to do this. I got to go all in. So yeah, so it's about creating a platform so that I can have more of a voice for some of the causes that are really important to me. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, you're welcome back on the show anytime.
Thank you so much. And it's been amazing.
I'm so happy to see you. You look fantastic. And like, we both feel like we are still 20. So that's good.
Yes.
And so make sure to check out Dion's music. Of course, the new single is Remedy for Insanity. And you can grab all of the information, of course, on his website, DionTodd.com.
The Kelly Alexander Show.
We really appreciate you spending time with us on the program this week. And we'd also like to give a special shout out to our guests, Ali X and Dion Todd. Not to mention our super producer, Adam Brisson, for pushing all the right buttons. Don't forget that you can listen to us on many different platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. And don't forget, you can hit us up on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com, and grab all our social media handles. Have an excellent week. You and I'll chat soon.